You know that we love our on-demand listeners here at Lutheran Public Radio. Now, if you've enjoyed listening to Issues Etc. in 2008, please consider making a year-end gift to help support this worldwide outreach. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can contribute by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and mail it to LPR Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. LPR Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us as we approach the end of 2008.
If I punch you, you're going to turn the other cheek.
20 years ago, I would have knocked you back. But now I would create an environment where you would cease to feel hostility.
The elites of California have decided that we're going to have same-sex marriage, and what the people want can be damned.
You are asked now, perhaps by your creator, not on a question of gay or straight. You are asked now to stand on a question of love. Let the tiny ember of love meet its own fate.
All you need is love.
Since President-elect Obama said that his main thing was change, then it's time for him to have a change of heart for the little babies in America who are being aborted and they're dying.
Well, it's probably one of those subjects in church history people consider the least relevant. American history, that has some relevance. World history, sure. For some reason, we see the logic of this statement that if we forget history, we're doomed to repeat its mistakes in the secular realm. But in the religious realm, in the realm of the church, Christians care very little about church history, especially American evangelicals. Why is this? They know very little about church history, and they consider it, what they do know, irrelevant to them today. We continue a five-part daily series, part three today, with Dr. Larry Rast on American evangelicalism today. It is ahistorical. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours of the program. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. It's Wednesday, December the 3rd. A little later in this hour, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us. We'll talk about the news media and American evangelicalism. Evangelicals are known as media savvy. Is there more to it than just savvy? Is there also a bit of compromise at work, especially lately? Jennifer Roback-Morse will join us in the second hour of the program. There's a new study on American teens lying, cheating, stealing, and apparently doing it with impunity. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about two issues in the second hour. A new leader of the Orthodox Church in America, 1 minute he's elected bishop of a diocese in Texas, then, and I think maybe 10 days later, he's the primate of the entire church body. He apparently sees what's wrong, and that got elected him primate. We'll talk about that along with Terry Mattingly and also media coverage of religion, one of Terry's specialties. The Reverend Canon Daryl Fenton will join us about the formation of a new Anglican church body for North America in the last part of Issues Etc. today. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Dr. Larry Rast joins us. He's academic dean and professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, part three of a five-part series on American evangelicalism. Today we're hitting Larry right where he lives, the ahistorical nature of pop American Christianity. Larry, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Todd. It's great to be with you.
I mean, I can get by in my everyday life without knowing a lot of history. I can go forward day by day. What's wrong with me saying, look, as far as I'm concerned, church history begins when I became a Christian?
The short-sighted character of it, I think, is probably one of the worst aspects of what you just said. It is so self-centered, and what the Reformation theologians would have called curvatus in se, that is, turned in on oneself, that well, obviously to me, and I'm a little biased given the fact that I am a historian, but I just find that kind of sentiment unthinkable. Because how did you get to be here? How did you get to be to the place that you are? You know, there's a background, there's a story, there's a history, there's a family that you have, and that's as true of us as individual Christians. You know, we're part of a larger family. We've come to be where we are by virtue of those who have gone before, and we also therefore have a responsibility to those who will come after us as well. And I've often said that. In fact, when I was a pastor in Tennessee, I served in the Nashville, Tennessee area for about 5 years, and we had several building programs at my congregation, and just a wonderful, wonderful congregation that I worked with there. At one point, when we were doing the dedication of a very significant building, I said to the folks, you know, what we've done up to this point is great stuff, but this is just the beginning. And so if you simply see yourself as starting something from scratch and not having any kind of broader plan, you're not any part of a broader stream, part of a broader movement, something beyond yourself, well, then you've fallen into kind of your isolated, just me and me, myself, and I. And if you extend that then to the evangelical realm, you talk about just me and Jesus at the expense of everybody else. And when we're talking about the church and when we're talking about the people of God, we're talking about something far beyond that intense individualism that so much characterizes Americans generally and also American evangelicals.
What do American evangelicals in particular miss if they don't know their own history, not just church history in general, which is, of course, the focus of this conversation, but if they don't know where they came from? You know, you join the average big box church with its big screen and its praise band, and you think, well, how long has this church been around? You look outside, maybe by the front door they've got a sign that says established 1982. The only thing beyond that is the pastor's own story about how he founded this church going door to door. And you think to yourself, well, this was just a field before we came around here. What are they missing if they don't know their own history?
Yeah. They're missing the larger story, obviously, of what it is they're a part of and what it is that has brought them to this point. And the result can be, and I think you've begun to put your finger on it, Todd, that it can become either so institutionally centered or, in some cases, centered around a particular individual, probably a very charismatic pastoral leader, that then again, the future, the anticipated future of the enterprise can be limited in scope. That is to say, you know, imagine you have a really dynamic, charismatic individual who brings a congregation into being, and then once that very dynamic, charismatic individual moves on in one form or another, maybe, you know, takes a call to a different place or is serving in a different capacity or is taken home to the Lord, suddenly that congregation, that institution finds itself totally directionless. It forgets who it is, you might say. And the result being that they don't then, therefore then know where to go. Striking example of this, it seems to me, is happening at the Crystal Cathedral right now, where in the past few months, Robert Schuller's own son has been dismissed or kept from being the preacher of that institution on the Hour of Power TV show. They said, "Well, we'll let him preach, you know, to the folks who are present here, but we're going to restrict him in respect to the TV program." And as a result, suddenly the entire place finds itself in chaos. It doesn't know where it's going. It begins to fall apart. And part of the reason for that is that they're so tied to a present story rather than having a deeper understanding of where it was they came from that then gives them a guide for where it is they're going. The result being that they can fall into all kinds of confusion, disarray, and that has a profound effect then on their ministry in a given place and time.
How much of this is attributable to, and I'm talking here about the last 30, 40 years among American evangelicals, the baby boomers generation? I'm one, you're one, Larry.
Get so personal.
Well, it's the incessant need to take what was already perfectly good and not broken and try and fix it, or to reinvent the wheel, as you said before.
Right. Yeah, it's become almost a commonplace, a truism, that that new is good and that anything old must be bad, and therefore things have to change. We've just gone through this in a presidential election where the argument was change we can believe in. The problem was we weren't often told what the nature of that change actually was. So the change, the experience of change, the cultivation of change becomes the end in itself. You might almost say that it's the process that becomes the truth rather than any particular truth. So that as long as you're changing, as long as something is giving way, as long as the past is being overcome, then you're on the right kind of track. And you know, I'm a consumerist. I'm you know, like you said, I'm a tail end baby boomer here, and I like my stuff as an American, and I'm as guilty as anybody else in having kind of a disposable mentality when it comes to the things of my life. You know, my truck now is a 2001 model, and I'm getting a little bit tired of the thing. I think I need a change. I think I need something new. But in fact, there's nothing wrong with my truck. It runs great. It gets me around. In fact, I just moved a bunch of stuff around with my wife about an hour ago, which she didn't think was all that great, but I thought was pretty helpful. So why fix it if it ain't broke is one of the ways that we can state it. But there's something even beyond that. That's a little too consumerist in its own perspective.
About 30 seconds here.
Okay, what we're talking about here is not something that doesn't work. We're talking about the eternal gospel, the message of salvation in Jesus Christ, the one thing that can create faith in sinful human beings, the one thing that opens the way to heaven for them. The gospel is not broken. What may end up having been broken is the manner in which we've packaged it, the way we've obscured it, the way we've trivialized it, the way we've turned it into a fad.
Dr. Larry Rast is our guest. We're talking about the ahistorical nature of American evangelicalism. We'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned.
For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history.
Christian apologist Gretchen Passantino on the importance of issues, etc.
This is the best that Christian radio gets. And I know that anyone who listens to this show will get sound biblical doctrine and, most importantly, a complete focus on the cross and on Christ. I've done so many radio shows over 35 years, literally thousands of them, and I know of no other program that puts the cross and the gospel right at the focus of everything.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, Issues, Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues, Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues, Etc. Mark Voss, Marianne Coley, Michelle Mertz, Neil Breitbarth, Gary Johnson, Joe Johnson, Gary Griffin, Michael Lee Kinsey, Chad Winters, and Pastor Ronald Wagner. Thanks for your support.
Evangelical and Catholic. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Issues, Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues, Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Issues, Etc., Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support of Issues, Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, the 3rd of December. If you have a question or a comment on Pop American Christianity, give us a call now, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Our email address right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Larry Rast is our guest. Larry, if we forget this history, if American evangelicalism doesn't even know where it came from, much less where the church has been and where it's come from, can they really answer questions like everyday Sunday morning questions like, why are we singing this? Why are we praying this? Why is he preaching that? Why do we do this as opposed to that?
Yeah, you cannot. I think you put it quite well there. The simple fact that you've that you're so tyrannized by the present robs you of the capacity to be able to say, this is why we do certain things. Now, the obvious result of that oftentimes is then, well, let's stop doing it. Is there any really good reason for us to continue in this? Not unlike our conversation yesterday when we were describing the use of the creed, the recited creed within the context of the divine service, and the shock that I shared that was communicated to me by folks that would come to my congregation in Tennessee. They'd never heard such a thing. Why are you saying this? What is this thing? Where did it come from? The difference we had in our circumstances was that we had an answer for them. We were able to say to them, we are speaking these words, words that are biblically based, that have their roots in the Scripture, that communicate timeless truths, and we're speaking these not as, how shall we say it, an individualist manifesto in whatever year it might be, but rather as we speak these words, we are speaking with the church of all time, a church that extends well beyond what is happening here and now, but that has its roots in the purposes of God in eternity, that has manifested itself in a variety of times, in a variety of locations, and any conceivable geography, and which will continue to manifest itself through the work of God's Holy Spirit until that day that the Lord Jesus comes back. And that is such a powerful statement, particularly in our present postmodern times, where truth has become tribal, where people feel themselves isolated and lonely. When you begin to understand your story, when you begin to get a feel for the larger part that you, the part that you play in the larger whole that is God's church, and that church stretching throughout time and pushing on out into the future, suddenly you're not just a meaningless blob of flesh that walks the earth for 70 or 80 years, but you're God's own chosen person, called, sanctified, redeemed by Christ, brought into his kingdom, and your story is part of a part of God's story, and finally has its fruition in your gathering before the throne where we will gather together to worship the Lamb and his kingdom, which has no end. Now that's history at its best.
Now, here's the irony I see, okay, and I think I'm painting with not too broad a brush that perhaps the average adherent to Pop American Christianity has a pretty good idea what the church looks like today. Then there's a big gap. He might go back to some vague picture of Puritans landing here in the North American continent, not really sure what Puritans are, got a clear idea of how they dressed but not what they believed, maybe a picture of Luther in the 16th century, can't really tell you much more about Luther than he might have posted something somewhere, and then another huge gap going back to frankly, a quite distorted and romantic view of the first century church. And the irony I see here, Larry, is that many of these American evangelical churches today claim to be, without any real historical evidence, repristinating the church. We're doing it the way the first century church did it. We're going back to the way the apostles had it.
Yeah, there is a profound irony there. Because if you walked into many of the dominant churches on the American scene, the ones that are held up today as kind of the church of where things are really happening at this point in time, they in many ways would bear the least resemblance to what you would find within a first century church. So even the claim of being able to jump back over church history to restore or to repristinate what the New Testament is teaching is a little bit of a stretch, and there I'm probably being overly charitable. Excuse me. The when in fact, think of what you're saying theologically when you dismiss large periods of church history that facilely. Basically, you're making a claim that it that I myself am the, if you will, the appropriate interpreter of the New Testament, and I'm the one who's bringing back what has been lost. Perhaps it popped up to a greater or lesser extent at various times in church history, but in terms of what is really the appropriate New Testament form of the church, well, that's what I've managed to achieve at this point in time. But I'll guarantee you, in first century Christianity, you didn't have comfy chairs, and nor did you have really good sound systems and that sort of thing. So what I think a real grappling with the story of the church does, it challenges all of us. It challenges all of us to really think about what it is that the church is, what it is that God has established as the church through the proclamation of his word, through the administration of the sacraments, and then to, again, to challenge ourselves as to whether or not we are upholding the confession, the speaking of the truth that the church has made in all ages, as well as recognizing in all ages the places where the church has confused the gospel, has obscured the testimony of Jesus, has taken the scriptures out of their context or drawn erroneous conclusions. If we don't do that, if we don't find that kind of critical capacity to allow the past to challenge us, then we will fall into what you opened the show with, namely that absolutely certain phrase that says those who cannot remember the past are bound to repeat it.
Finally, then, does the ahistorical nature of Pop American Christianity create a gigantic blind spot for its adherents, namely that they cannot see how thoroughly Americanized or how deeply under the influence of pop culture they have fallen?
Yeah, and in fact, Neil Postman, whom you probably know well, Todd, has written extensively on this point, as well as another of other culture critiques. But if you don't, you're tracking very well with me here in terms of my own thinking. This is if you don't have this larger critical capacity, if you don't have a broader witness and understanding of what has gone before, it is extremely difficult to understand where you are now. And then, of course, the obvious thing is, then what does that mean in terms of where you're going? I often put it this way. It's like American pop culture suffers from amnesia, and that it's forgotten its past, it's forgotten who it is, and as a result, it can be told by anyone, this is who you are, and this is what you should do. Now, sometimes that's okay. If a good Samaritan comes along and helps you out when you're suffering from amnesia, they can point you in the right direction. They can hook you up with your family. They can get you care. They can get you well. But if a bad Samaritan comes along who wants to exploit you, they can come along and basically point you in any direction whatsoever. And some of those directions may not be the best for your own personal future. The same thing holds true for the church.
We both repeated it. Those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. If one forgets the past, can one have a hope of repeating not only avoiding the errors, but of repeating the old truths that hold true regardless of when you are a Christian? About a minute here to respond.
Well, I'd say a little bit more. I didn't quite track with you there.
Well, it just seems to me that if the errors are the danger of forgetting the past, then the equal danger is not being able to remember the truth.
I got you.
About 30 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's the whole point. Take a guy like Luther, for example. He's easily held up as a radical who was about rebelling and throwing off things, when in fact, if you read Luther's own work, he says it's more important to recognize the things that I retained than what I overthrew, because what I was retaining are those things that are essential, that are part of the heart of the church, that are the substance of the church. So Luther wasn't some radical who came along and just said, let's change everything. Luther was more about, let's allow the gospel to continue to be everything we're about as the people of God.
Well, next time, that's Monday, we'll be talking with Dr. Larry Rast about the asacramental nature of American Christianity. He's academic dean and professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Larry, it's always a pleasure. Talk to you Monday.
Thanks very much, Todd. I'm looking forward to it.
Folks, if you appreciate Issues Etc., a voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism, please consider making a year-end gift to help support this worldwide outreach. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. That address, LPR Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. When we come back from this break, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway joins us. We're going to talk about the news media. They're pretty tough on Christians, but we'll also talk about the degree to which American Christianity has compromised to get the ear of the media. She's author of an article in a recent issue of Modern Reformation magazine titled Codependency of the Media and Evangelicals. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, right after this on Issues Etc.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Will Wheaton on the Treasury of Daily Prayer.
All I can say is prepare to be blown away. It's something I've never seen in the whole of Lutheran liturgical history. It's a complete daily office book and so much more, and it's in a single volume.
Order an advance copy of the Treasury of Daily Prayer by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or look for the cover at our website, issuesetc.org.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
An Italian version of the Terri Schiavo case is unfolding there. A young woman was left seriously disabled following a car accident. She's being given food and water through a tube, and there's debate whether or not she's in a coma. Italy's highest court gave the woman's father the right to kill her by dehydration and starvation. But here's where the case differs from Terri Schiavo's. No doctor or staff at the hospital is willing to carry out the deadly deed. The president of the Lombardy region said he will take disciplinary action against any caregiver who fails to take care of this patient. Medical officials from other regions have also refused to participate in the killing. Hopefully, the people of Italy will stand strong and this woman's life will be spared.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Eileen Matika, Heidi Bometry, Joanne Lee, Fiona Lee, Helen Weimers, Robert Bometry, Christina Lewis, Marion Miller, Marilyn Ostby, and Doug Heidemann. Thanks for your support.